I'd like to call the order, the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, February 12th, 2018, and has been our longstanding tradition for many years. I'd like to invite everyone to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First order of business is to the approval of the executive session minutes from January 22nd.
Motion to approve, Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Councilmember Boyas. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Kelsey, if you'll let the record show, it's a 4-0 vote, and that Councilman Burrell is not able to attend because of illness. All right, the reason for the closing, the three different reasons under the open meeting provisions of the state. First was to discuss the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, discipline, demotion, compensation, removal, resignation, or performance evaluation of an appointee, appointees, employees, or officials over whom the mayor and council has jurisdiction. Second reason was to consult to obtain legal advice on a legal matter from our council. And third was before a contract is awarded or bids are open to discuss a matter directly related to a negotiating strategy or the contents of a bid or its proposal. Okay. So we have, each year we have, for as long as I can remember, we've always been pleased to host and welcome and Michael Franklin, the president and CEO of Atlantic General Hospital, and he gives us an annual update. Because there's always something going on down there. Always. There's always something going on down there. So you always have stuff to tell us.
We don't want you to get bored.
No, thank you.
You don't want me to get bored.
Mayor, I'm sorry. Did the approval for the regular session minute?
Oh, no, we're not going to do that. We have a motion for the, do we have a motion for the approval of the regular session?
Motion to approve, Mayor.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Same thing. Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
I thought I was daydreaming and missed it.
Keep us on track.
Hey, we're just so anxious. You know?
That's right.
That's good. That's cool.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members for allowing us to come and talk to you again this year to update you on what's going on with Atlantic General Hospital, to let you know how we performed last year and what's going to be happening over the next year or so, and answer any questions you might have about what's happening. You may know this is our 25th year, and I'd like to take a minute to thank you all, because obviously the town of Berlin was instrumental to Atlantic General Hospital being here and being where it is. And there'll be a celebration, 25th anniversary celebration. You can mark your calendars for May 17th. It'll be at the sponsored by or hosted by the Godelsky family over in West Ocean City. And again, the celebration is really celebrating our community and the support that we've had for Atlantic General Hospital and building this facility in this community. I'm going to go through these slides very quickly and not dwell too long on all the slides, but there are a few slides like the one that talks about the county health rankings that I do want to spend some time on explaining what's important about communities and what determines the health and well-being of the people who live in a community. And county health rankings are done annually by a university out in the Midwest for all counties across the country, and then they break it down by state, and then we can compare within a state the health and well-being of the different counties. There are 24 counties in the state of Maryland. Health factors that affect health, there are two primary areas, so health factors and health outcomes. Health outcomes are pretty easy. It's the length of life and the quality of life in communities. and that's where the rankings come from. The health factors are a little more complex, and you can see that 20% of what happens from a health factors perspective are related to clinical care, which are the healthcare services provided in the community, which relate to access to care being a very important issue, and we'll talk about that a lot more because that's a key issue in our community. And then quality of care, which is also important, but that's related to, that also kind of feeds into the health outcomes. But the majority of what affects the health factors in a community are individual behaviors and personal issues that, like social and economic factors, things that happen in a community as a whole. 70% of what makes up the health factors in a community are kind of unrelated to these other things. They're more about personal choice. And a lot of things that we're focusing on, a lot of issues that we're working to address, deal with those healthy behaviors. How can we deal with tobacco use? How can we deal with improving the amount of exercise? How can we reduce the amount of drug and alcohol abuse? And a lot of the issues that are affecting our communities are directly related to those. When you get down to the social and economic factors, level of education, income, the families as a unit and having families close by all affect the quality of life and the quality of health in a community. So there, I show these to you, and one to talk a little bit about how we rank in Worcester County, but also this is all going to relate to what our community members are saying to us and then directly what our strategic plan is and how we're moving forward on it. Worcester County is ranked 15th in the state on the health factors. 15th out of 24, so we're on the wrong side of the median for health factors. But again, a lot of that has to do with access to healthcare services. A lot of that has to do with economic factors in the community. We also have a higher proportion of the people in our community who smoke. We have a higher proportion of people who are overweight or obese in our community. So there are a lot of factors, those social and economic factors, as well as personal behavior factors that are affecting these rankings. But if you look immediately to our west, you can see that of the six counties that are the worst ranked, four of them are our immediate neighbors. And there's a lot of potential influence across those lines into our community. And so how do we also create positive influences across those lines into Wicomico and Somerset County as well? So that's one snapshot, again, those health factors. The health outcomes, the length of life and quality of life, we're ranked 10th in the state, which is on the good side of the median. And there's a pretty wide wider disparity than most cases, than all the other cases between the health rankings and health outcomes. So that's a good thing that we're providing a good quality of life and people that are living longer that live in our community. Again, looking directly at our neighbors, they're of the bottom six are the same six that were on the other side. As I said, there wasn't as much moving around as you see with ours. But those influences in our community, and how are we dealing with those influences, and how are we addressing those? And a lot of that feeds into, again, as we get into the strategic plan and what we're hearing out of our community. When we look at, and when this report looks at it, and when we spin it down and look specifically in our community, how do we assess the healthcare, and what are the key factors? And there are three key factors. One is the ease of gaining entry into the healthcare system. How do we access healthcare services in a location where it's needed? So how are we placing them around the community based on the community need? And then can somebody, do people who live in our community have a healthcare provider that they know and can trust and have a good relationship with? So a primary care relationship in our community. Key factor with that is health insurance. We have, in Worcester County, we're fortunate that we have about half the number of uninsured population as the rest of the state. It looks positive from these statistics. When you spin that down a little bit, most of it has to do with the fact that we have a much older population. So we have a higher proportion, about twice the number of people on Medicare because of the older population. And we have a much higher percentage of people on Medicaid. So the Medicaid expansion and the public assistance from that perspective, the statewide health plan, are affecting a lot more people in our community. And that has to do with the social and economic side of things in our community. But from these statistically, it does provide more access for people in our community from that, from the perspective of they have insurance, they have an ability to pay for a number of healthcare services. Again, part of the risk of that is the aging community, where yes, we have a higher proportion of Medicare recipients, but right now, 26% of our population is over the age of 65. In our community, by 2030, one-third of our population is going to be over the age of 65. And if you look at that graphic on there, the green line is going up, and the other green lines are going down, or the other lines are going, color lines are going down. Those other color lines are the people that we need to relocate this community to take care of all the people on the green line that are going up, if that makes sense. Our working age, the people providing the services to care for the people who are older, who need the services the most, we're kind of dropping in our proportion of those people in our community, and that's a risk for us. So that also affects our strategic plan and how are we functioning as an organization to attract talent to our community to take care of the aging population and to do a good job there, and how are we creating a community that attracts people in that age group, that roughly that 30 to 55 age group, the 30 to 60 age group, that we need to provide the services to take care of the population that's over the age of 65. And then one other issue I want to spend a little time on is obviously dealing with mental health and behavioral health, which is a big issue statewide and nationally, and especially dealing with addictions. From a provider perspective, the state of Maryland is underserved, and all the data is showing that the state of Maryland is underserved. We have one mental health, behavioral health provider to every 10,000 or so people that live in this state. And I'll show you some statistics on that, what that is causing statewide. But even that being an underserved overall from the state, we're roughly about 60%, 61% worse off in the state, in Worcester County, if you look at the number of providers to the population. There are only three providers, and when I say providers, I'm talking about either psychiatrists, physicians, or nurse practitioner working along with those psychiatrists in our community. So we're even more underserved than the remainder of the state. And this is a slightly outdated chart now. We just got the numbers last week, and I haven't had time to update it in here for you all. But the number of intoxication deaths, it has come down. The projected number has come down a little bit from that 550 to slightly under 500, but it's still going up. It's just not going up as rapidly there. And part of the good news is Worcester County has the greatest decrease in the number of unintentional deaths throughout the state. So we had a decrease as opposed to the increase that the statewide is experiencing. We had a decrease, I believe, around 40% in Worcester County, which is great news. So while that's the case, and we're dealing with it more effectively in our community, we still have a statewide problem, and this is where I was saying with the, if you look at the graphic, particularly on the right, only 14% of psychiatrists in the state are accepting new patients, new Medicare patients in particular, and then and new patients from the health insurance exchange. So they're monitoring who's going on there and who's receiving new patients. Only 14% of Maryland psychiatrists, and then are able to book, or accepting new patients and able to book a new appointment within 45 days of being called. So somebody needs help with addictions, needs help from a behavioral or mental health issue. If it's a crisis, 45 days is not a very good number, and only 14% can get you in within 45 days, or 45 days booked out. Still with those is really not a very good number. So this slide is there to demonstrate how underserved we are as a state, and just trying to give an impression. We've got a lot of work to do in our community, and I'll share with you a little bit of how we're trying to work. So that was laying the environment from a statewide perspective and how we're doing related to the rest of the state. As we talk about our community health needs assessment that we're obligated to do every 3 years, we'll be updating this community health needs assessment in 2018. But if you look at the most recent assessment and you look at the most recent priority areas that were reported to us by the people in our community, this is all done on a survey of our community. The number one concern and the number one priority area that was cited in our assessment was the access to healthcare services, which you can tell matches up kind of with what's happening and all the information that we're seeing from all these other sources. Number two, and a large reason because of the aging of our population, is cancer is the number one issue in our community, is a top issue in our community. It used to be all of our prior community health needs assessments, cancer was number one, but it's now been surpassed by access to health services. Cancer is still there. And then you look at all these other things that, again, relate to those issues that we cited both nationally and statewide: nutrition, physical activity, mental health, opioid abuse. All those things are what we're hearing also from people who are surveyed in our community as issues that we need to address in our community. So all that leads to our strategic plan. Our strategic plan is, it should be based on our mission and vision, but it's about how do we bring together all these healthcare services that we need to have in the community. So one, within that plan, we're citing what we view generally as what are services that are necessary to exist in a community, to be able to take care of a community and really make sure those that community's health needs are met. That's the inpatient emergency care and all that. The behavioral health, obviously, rehab and long-term care. We've got to figure out, one, how to make sure we have an adequate supply of all that, and two, how do we make all that work together in a coordinated fashion so that we provide high-quality care to the people who live in our community. From a principal's perspective, we look at this from the five rights. We have to make sure those five rights are existing, and that's our obligation as a hospital to make sure that the right care, the right people, the right place, services, the right partners, and we're creating the right hospital to make these conditions exist so that we can bring the right primary care physicians and the right number of specialty care physicians and create the right environment for all this to exist. So this is just a snapshot of our strategic plan. Some of the things that we're doing in regards to that in making sure that we're creating a more coordinated and healthier community. One big issue that we face, as an example, is when people come to the hospital and they're in the hospital, obviously they're going to most of the time be discharged with some kind of a prescription. Statistics showed that anywhere from two-thirds to three-quarters of the people, only two-thirds to three-quarters, would actually get that prescription filled. One of the things we're doing now, we have a retail pharmacy inside the hospital. People are having their prescriptions delivered to them at the bedside. So when they walk out of the hospital, they've got it with them. Then they can continue their care outside of the hospital with that prescription and not get readmitted to the hospital and get healthier faster. So it's a quality of care issue, but it also prevents and tries to reduce the cost of healthcare in our community. We're also trying to do a good job of preparing people who are growing up in our community to be better consumers of healthcare in the future, to reduce the amount of reliance on healthcare services by having a healthier population. So by working with our kids in the Worcester County schools and through our health literacy program that's now integrated into the math, science, reading, social studies part of the school curriculum, and about 40% of the academic time kids are facing, around 2,600 kids in our community are facing on a daily basis, relate to healthcare related issues. We can do a whole lot of math education with just food labels and taking complex social issues related to proper diet and food labels and working with kids to do math and to do reasoning around why it's important to only have sometimes foods and all the time foods and do all those types of things. That's what our teachers are now working with our kids on in high school curriculum or in school curriculum. And then we'll be surveying graduating seniors. Next year is kind of a baseline survey. And in about 5 years, we're going to have kids that have been exposed to this curriculum graduating. We'll be resurveying them through the University of Maryland to look at the effectiveness of this curriculum on our population going forward. So we're doing a lot to help in the future of the people who live in our community, who will be growing up to take care of the older population in our community. As I said in our strategic plan, one of our key issues is how do we create better access to physicians, the right number of providers in our community. We've added over the last couple of years quite a few specialty providers dealing with strategically critical issues. We added a pain management physician because chronic pain is a number one reason for people to go on opioids and then become addicted to to opiates. So how do we deal with chronic pain in a way that prevents them from being inappropriately reliant upon opioids? We've expanded our women's health providers because of the number of women in the aging population. We've added a urologist that's dedicated to our community for the same reason. We were able to recruit a few months ago an endocrinologist to our community because we have a higher number of diabetics than most other communities, and diabetes is, and we have a diabetes center associated with his endocrinology practice. And of course, primary care is number one. We've added primary care physicians in our community, as well as other key specialists like dermatology. Cancer is, when we talk about cancer being the number two issue that's cited by the population in our community, skin cancer is the number one diagnosed cancer in our community. Most people who have cancer require a surgeon. We've been fortunate to add a couple of new surgeons in our community, and they're also, we've expanded our capabilities for doing bariatric surgery because again, overweight and obesity is a key issue in our community. And then having oncologists to really take care of one of the top issues that's available. So we've been fairly successful in the last couple of years of getting a good complement of physicians in our community. In creating an environment where people, getting those people to come into our community to take care of that older population, one is creating a hospital and a health system that's competitive, because everybody's competing for these same resources. We received this award this past year, Best in Benefits, and there were only 10 organizations in this eastern region where we are that received this award. But Best in Benefits, meaning that the value for what people pay for benefits, whether it's health insurance, whether it's other types of benefits provided, the value that you get for what it costs you is very high. And a lot of that has been borne out in our in the awards that we've won over the last year regarding our healthy workforce. We're a gold medal winner in the state for a healthy workforce. And our medical claims, if you look at the costs of doing business, one of our highest costs of doing business, and it's the same way for most businesses and organizations, I'm sure for the city, for the town, it's the same thing. And medical claims, since we're self-insured, our medical claims were 20% lower than what we expected in 2016. We don't have all the 2017 numbers in yet, but for 2017 is continuing on the same path we were in 2016. It's 20% lower than what we expected. And we were able to, for the last couple of years, not have to increase our employees' premiums. That's what they pay. That's what we all pay. We were able to not increase premiums because our healthcare costs stayed basically the same. We didn't have any inflation in our healthcare costs. We kept premiums flat. In most areas of the country and in most businesses, that's kind of a double-digit inflationary issue right now. So we've been very fortunate in working on creating a healthier workforce and better attention to coaching people on how to be healthier to have good payout. So that resulted in us having a better financial performance in 2017 than we had in 2016. Our total margin was about $600,000 better than it was the prior year. And that's all very important as we continue to expand and we begin to embark on our capital campaign where we're looking to raise $10 million from our community to help us to defray the cost of $35 million of investments in meeting that strategic plan and bringing the types of healthcare services and modernizing the healthcare services that we need in our community. Again, I'd like to thank the town for participating with us and helping to sponsor some bank-qualified bonds so that we could get a very low interest rate on our bond financing, so we were able to secure $40 million, $20 million of which was refinancing and $20 million that we can use toward the $35 million of expansion that we're planning to do. Key part of that, we have five key areas that we're going to be focusing on over the next few years of that $35 million investment. What's being built there right now is the John H. Jack Burbidge Regional Cancer Care Center, and You can see the progress of that. And with that, we're finalizing the partnership with 21st Century Oncology, which has been an oncology facility over here on Franklin Avenue for the last 15 years or so. They'll be joining with us and on our campus. And then University of Maryland is going to be working with us through telemedicine and providing consultation services for really more complex and more difficult types of cancer cases. The physician will be coming here through telemedicine instead of patients having to drive up to the University of Maryland for consultation. And then if they require treatment that we don't have the capabilities of performing, the patient can go up there already having had the consultation. And because they're working with our physicians as a team, when the patients come back here, our physicians can then pick up that care, and we will be working in partnership with University of Maryland to care for those patients. Just to brag a little, because you don't get to say this very often on the Eastern Shore, but well, we're on time, on schedule with this building project. And I mentioned these things. The other four areas, in addition to that, we finished our comprehensive women's health facility over in West Ocean City last year in our Women's Imaging Center. So now we're providing a single location for women's health services and co-locating where they would go for all their diagnostic testing also to make that easier. Our next phase is modernization of the patient care areas in the hospital. Our hospital is 25 years old, and our patient rooms and our patient care floors were designed 25 years ago. Things have changed. We do things a lot differently than what we did, and so we need to modernize our facilities to really make them more up to date and actually become more the hospital of the future than the hospital of the 1990s. Our surgical service facilities likewise need to be modernized and be able to be enlarged to accommodate all the equipment we have now in surgical suites. Although we do minimally invasive surgery requires a lot more equipment to be able to accomplish that, and we need to have room for the equipment and the surgeon all in the space around the patient. So we need to modernize and expand our facilities. And then we need to, because of the resort community and the growing community, more people moving here, we need to make sure that we've got the right size emergency room to care for that population, and the right size to deal with the outpatients and all the blood tests and x-ray tests that we need to be performing. Our emergency room right now is sized for, on typical standards, sized for around 28,000-29,000 emergency room visits per year, and we're seeing around 38,000 emergency room visits per year. But because of our turnaround time, we're able to be more efficient and we're able to keep up. So it's just, how do we continue to be efficient but also have the right size facilities so people don't have to wait and we can take care of them? We're doing our share of making sure that we take advantage of capital dollars and grant resources that are available to us. We got $681,000 awarded by the state legislature last year for the Regional Cancer Care Center. And then the state is, we're part of the state capital bond budget for this year from the governor for $1.3 million to help us upgrade the surgical services. So about $2 million so far that we've been able to secure from the state in grant funding to defray the $35 million cost. And then finally, if you look at who we are and the kind of impact we have on the community as a resource, I share this with you all every year, but we now have a medical staff of 227 physicians. We have a payroll of nearly 900 people who work at the hospital, and over $48 million, almost $50 million now that goes into the payroll that's returned back into our community. The services that we provide, almost $12.5 million in free services, whether that's uncompensated care, whether that's flu shots in our flu clinics, or if it's just a health fair and providing services at health fairs, those community benefits. We have about $12.5 million now that we're providing in free care back to the community. So again, it's our responsibility and the vision of our board to for us to be the leader in providing care for the community, and we're here 25 years this year, and it'll be an important celebration coming that we'd like you all to be a part of since you're a part of our organization. And I'd also like to introduce Jack Burbage. Because you saw his name on here earlier at the Regional Cancer Care Center, but he wanted to share a few words regarding our capital campaign.
I'm going to be long, I promise. Just a few minutes.
No problem.
Not that I was long.
I just got a couple of things I want to talk to you about our campaign. Number one, I'm sure most of you know, but there's 231 associates at work that live in Berlin or have a 21811 address. That's not Berlin proper, but it's Berlin community. There's 231 people work at the hospital that do that. The hospital rents 42,000 square feet of space within the town of Berlin that they pay rent on that people support around here. The hospital treats 11,000 patients this past year with the Berlin 21811 address. So 11,000 of our people and our friends went to the hospital. You know, the AGH's total operating revenue is $124 million a year. That's just slightly below the county's. Overall, we have 900 employees at the hospital with a payroll of over $48 million. So you can imagine the impact that has on the town. And the last statement is there is currently over $60 million in economic and community benefit resources that are retained within our community due to the support and development of AGH programs and services in our community. So, you know, it's been a happy marriage between Berlin and the hospital. We really need each other. You've been very good to us, helping us with our bonds and everything, and hopefully we've saved a few lives at the hospital because they didn't have to drive 20 minutes to get someplace to another hospital. So, it's been really good, but now we're having a campaign, and you heard Michael tell you all the new services that we've got in the last 5 years. I know of at least five: oncology, urology, dermatology, on and on and on. That's in the last 5 years. Think of what the next 5 years is going to be. Now we're bursting at our seams at our emergency room, and we need help and we need money. I'm here begging tonight to ask you to consider putting in your budget this year to give AGH, if you would consider it, $100,000 over 5 years. So that's $20,000 a year over 5 years. I know Berlin is an Ocean City. Don't want it to be. We don't want to be like Ocean City, you know, but they did give us it appears they're giving us $500,000, $100,000 a year. The Worcester County gave us $100,000 this year with the idea of come back, and they try to give us the same amount next year. We're here asking Berlin. Berlin's been good to us, no doubt. But I tell you, a lot of people spend money in Berlin. I think they buy homes, they deal in our towns and our restaurants, and there's a lot of money brought back to Berlin. But more than anything else, it's the right thing to do. We've got a hospital, it's our hospital in our community that's saving lives. And I'll bet there isn't one of you up there that doesn't have a friend that hasn't been touched by cancer. You know, they didn't know what it was years ago. And now we're going to have one of the nicest cancer facilities around. It's been found out that people won't travel to get the care. They'll let it go. If they have to go to get care, they'll let it go. They won't do it as often. But here they can just drive their mile away from where they have to go to get the treatment, the service, and the connection they're going to have with the University of Maryland and all the advances they're making with the records and all. It's just phenomenal the way it's going to explode. But to do all this takes money. As he said, we've got $35 million. We're trying to raise $10 million for the Cancer Society, the Cancer Building, the Emergency Care, the Women's Health, several different things, not all going to one place. And we really need your help. I know it's a lot of money. I know you got a tight budget. And I know how tough it is. But we also need to take care of our people and our community. And we've been good partners, and I'm just asking you to consider it moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Are there any questions that we can answer?
Well, I don't have any questions because it was a very thorough presentation, and of course, from having the perspective of the last several years, and One thing strikes me, it's kind of wild remembering all the work it took to get it started and the public support, and now to think that 25 years have passed already and it's time for some modernization. It's kind of like a little bit of time shock. And very well put. I mean, no argument at all. I have to admit, I was kind of wondering, because I read the papers about, you know, the presentation made to Ocean City, and I was thinking, okay, because I try to do this on Esoteric. If I was in your shoes, you and Jack, how much money would I ask Berlin for? And I wrote down a little figure, and it just happened to be, but maybe by pure luck, but maybe some considered judgment, that I thought $100,000, but not on one swap. And so, you know, I'm not speaking for the council, but for myself, that was the number I thought might be appropriate given our resources. We're not dirt poor, not anymore, never really were.
Right.
A lot of it was put away, but we're also, you know, trying to be responsible and meet the needs on a lot of different thresholds. But being a community that supports health and wellness, we hope is becoming one of the core values of 21st century Berlin.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously it'll be up to the council in the budget process to put our money where our mouth is for this and along with many other initiatives. But I'm personally just figuring myself, that was what I was anticipating, and I hope we can find a way to meet the request.
Thank you.
Maybe I should raise.
Don't push your luck.
I have a question off the topic of money.
Yes.
How you mentioned telemedicine.
Yes.
How are the services within the town as far as internet and fiber optic cable, things of that nature, to be able to allow you to do these things? Are they adequate?
Well, yeah, we're pretty fortunate that when the Maryland broadband was run up 113, and we're pretty close to 113, so we were able to tap into it relatively inexpensively. From a hospital perspective, we have a little more of a challenge getting to some of our other offices, but we're slowly starting into those. Ocean Pines was a little more difficult until Ocean City ran it along Route 90. We really didn't have any end runs that we can make up off of any extensions, any branches coming off of that. So the Maryland broadband has been very helpful to us. So that part of it hasn't been too bad. We still have a little bit of issue when the entire, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody's using it. All the businesses are using it, all the people are shopping, everybody's on it. So are all of our physicians, and we have a lot more traffic than what we used to do. And we're sending images, and x-rays are all digital now. So when physicians pull them up, they have to reach into our archive, and they pull up your x-rays in their office. We don't send them the pictures anymore.
So basically, your big challenge at the current is capacity at peak times.
Right.
And is that something that... Because we obviously we're very fortunate in the situation mm-hmm. we have here in town, but is that something that you think is going to be addressed by your partners and suppliers?
I think that gets addressed as we all learn to package it more efficiently.
Okay. Yeah.
With how the software delivers it and those types of things, create a little more efficiency. And as we expand our use and we have more and more physician visits, we'll be over 100,000 physician visits this year. Those are all on electronic medical records now. So all that data is data transfer. So if we have to add a strand, we have to add a strand to do it. So I think the access is there through Maryland broadband. It's been very helpful, and it's just may get down to affordability as more people get on it, but right now we're doing okay.
Second comment,
yeah.
Now we're back to money. $100,000 is a lot.
Yes.
I'd like to be able to set up a time that I can walk the hospital to really see what you'd like to improve, where you'd like to spend the money, so that I can vote a little bit more efficiently
yes.
when budget time comes around.
Yes. So. Call Tammy. She's a tour guide.
Perfect. Thank you. And I'd like to see the new cancer center.
When it hits
a point that we can do a walkthrough.
Yeah, we can. We actually did one last week to see the progress that's being made on the inside. So we can also hook you up for when that's happening.
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very,
yeah, wear a hard hat.
Good request. I have to say that the library, the Worcester County Library, did the same thing. They offered us an opportunity to see it before it was all done. So,
right.
Because, and here's the entry. Somehow, everybody thinks we know everything, and we don't. We know what we're informed, and as this gets closer, I find it, as we get closer to a new community asset, mm-hmm. we start getting more questions.
Yes.
So we obviously, you know, like to be able to get at least some preliminary information and say contact here or there, but
right.
that would be very helpful to us in our roles as public servants and, you know, to share news and information.
And you can also watch it on our website. We have a live cam with WMDT has a weather cam now that's pointing at that, so you can see
okay.
you can see the continuous progress. And we have a time-lapse imaging, so you can go back to the beginning and see the progress of it coming out of the ground too.
Okay.
Well, it looks good from the highway.
As a original board member, I guess 20 some years ago now, that's what it says, 25 years, it don't seem that long, but I was accused one time by one of the city council members, not here now, of trying to give the hospital too much money. So this is one of my favorite funding sources, so I'll be pulling.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brigham.
Do you have anything? Okay.
All
right.
No. Thank you all.
Thank
very
you
much.
Very much.
Thank
very
you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Our agenda item number three has been Chrissy Earhart has asked if we could postpone her presentation until the next meeting, so we'll happily accommodate her situation. And next is number four then, our motions to approve 2018-03, the reinstating of the town's Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland risk management policy, and reauthorizing the town administrator to represent the town in hearings for the Maryland Public Service Commission, which has been the practice for many years, and to take actions there on its behalf related to the proceedings. So,
this is actually the annual restatement of the risk management policy and the designation of the council in terms of granting me the authority to represent the town in our annual hearing and other related matters before the Public Service Commission. It's been our practice to bring this to you somewhere in the February, March, April timeframe. There haven't been any changes to the risk management policy, but I think it's a good opportunity for mayor and council members of the public to take a look at it, review it, refresh your memory, and then I'm just asking to be reauthorized to represent the town at the Public Service Commission hearing, which typically happens in December on the PCA hearing, but you know, things may come up during the year, but having that clean authorization is the recommendation of our electric utility attorney, and so I would ask you to approve this motion.
I would say, if you don't pass it, get ready to make a lot of trips and apples. just saying. No, it's worked out very well, and I think that we've always had good representation, in fact, very good representation before the Public Service Commission, and I can't help but note that we were the first public utility anywhere in Maryland to ever ask for a rate reduction. They said they had to postpone when we made the request. They had to postpone it a couple of months so they could do the research to find out how to do it. And then they were very gracious and allowed us to do it. But you know, it everybody has a responsibility, and the idea there is they're looking out for the public in general, not just the, you know, obviously our citizens and customers of the electric utility. But it's one of those things where it's a mutually respectful relationship, but one where they basically are looking closely at everything we do, and they have many responsibilities. But on the other hand, I think they found that, you know, we actually are privileged to have an electric utility, and I think they understand that. So does anyone have a motion or questions or comments?
Where do we stand on a side note for our electric rates? Do we think that they're going to remain constant, or are we anticipating an increase or a decrease?
We entered into a new contract in January of this year that runs for 3 years, and the purchase power rate is lower. I don't have the specific number in front of me, but it is lower than what we've had in previous years.
Because I noticed that something came across recently with Delmarva Power doing rate increase.
Big.
And it's nice to see that we're holding somewhat constant on that.
Yeah, so there's the cost of the purchase of the power, but then there's also transmission costs. And we don't have as much control over that. There's not like the opportunity to go on the market at purchase. And so what is happening in the market is those transmission costs are going up. And that's a component of the whole rate that people pay as well.
But basically, I think the short answer is for the next 3 years, we're not anticipating any increase. Maybe in certain cases, a little bit of a break, but generally speaking, what you've been paying, you won't be paying more. If you get lucky, you might be paying a little less, but it might not be enough to really notice. Maybe what? Yeah. But that's a good question. Thank you.
If nothing further, then I'll make a motion that we move forward with motion 2018-03.
All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Tindall to approve the reinstatement of the town's PJM risk management policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Aye. Thank you very much. Okay. Next is 4B, 2018-04, authorizing the mayor to sign an agreement with Betts and Holt, LLP, basically a legal firm, lawyers, regarding the electric department and other energy-related matters. And just as a comment, we're very pleased and very fortunate to have David Gaskell as our town council, our town legal counsel, and he handles a lot of different things. It always gets very interesting year after year. But in the world we live in today, in this century, we also have special legal counsel that we don't have to call very often for water resources, but that's a specialty in itself. And then we have special legal counsel related to the electric utility, which is a whole nother world. And then see what else? Stormwater. Yep, stormwater. We have another legal counsel, which fortunately, when you're starting, we just haven't had a lot of use there, but when we were first getting started, we needed their help critically, and it's just interesting. Things are so detailed, and you have to dig down so many layers that you just can't operate with even a very knowledgeable attorney because there's so much technical stuff. There's just it's like you have to be part engineer. Mm-hmm. And I just want to give some thing of background is why are we doing this? Because to have ourselves, and of course, obviously those council keep, we have bond council too, whenever we do a bond.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them out there. and again, they're specialists in their fields, and we don't care where they are, just that they're the best that we can possibly afford. And just kind of throw that out there for everybody to consider, and that is why we're looking for basically an agreement with Betts and Holtz. We've used them for
years. This is just a refresh of an existing agreement. And what it does is expand their services just slightly to include specifically other energy forms such as natural gas and solar. I think sort of by implication, we've used them for some advice on, for example, solar arrays and solar projects.
This
just gets it in black and white. There's no rate increase or anything like that, but it just spells out and broadens their opportunity to service widely because those kinds of issues can come up from time to time. It's just good to have it spelled out in the agreement.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Laura related to the proposed motion to approve 2018-04? Does anybody have any questions?
Motion to approve.
Okay. We have a motion to approve 2000 resolution 2018-04 with Betts and Holtz legal firm to represent us in regarding the electric department or other energy related matters. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And next there's we'll begin our departmental reports. First is our Finance Director, Natalie Salee.
Good evening. I just have one thing. We're moving forward to budget.
you haven't got it, went out, but we'll make sure we send it out from time to time. It's the schedule of the budget actual formal process. But this is, again, something that started a few years ago where the budget process actually begins in February, and letting this, the professional staff and department heads and everybody get down and dirty as to what they're. And generally, it's been working so far, and we knock on wood every year. We try to estimate our revenues conservatively, but our expenses on the high side. And that takes into account real life, where not everything goes wonderfully every day. But it's been working so far, and I think that approach has been good for us so far, and let's hope that we have another year like that.
Sure.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Natalie? Okay, next is Administrative Services Director Mary Boland. Welcome.
Just one quick item, thanks to the efforts of Jeff Fleetwood. We now have the public access channel streaming, so to speak, in the front lobby. We moved the cable connection basically over the wall, and are now able to run the public access channel information so that anyone visiting the front desk can see.
Great.
Nice job.
Excellent. That's very good. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you both for that. All righty. Anything else, Mary?
No, that was
okay.
It.
Okay, thank you. Jane is not here, so we'll go to Electric Utility Director Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have a few things to report on. During this downtime, we've done some maintenance work over at the power plant, especially on the number two engine. That was the engine that we had some issues with the turbos and the after coolers. Bay Diesel, which is a contractor, they came in and replaced the after coolers and put new turbos on the engine. And then we had to have Peaker Services come in and do some work on the speed control system that actually operates the engine. With installing the turbos and the after coolers, it actually boosted the RPMs of the engine, gave it more power, basically. So they had to come in and reprogram the device that actually controls how fast it operates and runs, which it's repaired now, and it works fine. Over at Schooner Lane, that's a job where we installed the new SNC switch to underground the overhead line that runs from Decatur Extended down that right-of-way past Gold Creek into Schooner Lane. We've already moved part of the underground primaries that will feed into it, and then the rest of this week, if it quits raining, hopefully, we'll move the rest of it, and then at that point, we'll be able to remove the overhead line all the way down through that wooded area going into Decatur Farms. Also at 15 Gay Street, which is the new commercial property over here on Gay, it's also got some rental property with it. We installed the transformer and energized the service to the building, so they now have power in there. Then also over at Henry Park, the new bathroom, we installed the underground service, and right now we're waiting on the electrician to install the meter base so we can connect the power to power up the bathroom. And then also over at the power plant, we had a company come in and do vibration testing on the engines, which was required by the insurance company that insures the engines for the town. We have to do that every 2 years. So they came in and did that. And then over at 9908 Old Ocean City Boulevard, there's two new homes that are being built over there, and we installed a construction service for that. And that's it.
Good. No, good. Anybody have any questions for Tim?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Police Chief Arnold Downing.
Good evening, everyone.
You don't have any news, do you?
Just a little bit. I'd like to say that the last couple of days have been very exciting and very humbling. On Friday, the ribbon cutting was wonderful, the outpour support, and the people that actually showed up, you know, were wide range from our partners in and local government and the county government, and to go ahead and see the law enforcement partners show up. That was real exciting. But on Saturday, to have almost 100 people show up to the open house and to go ahead and say they were so proud of what they were looking at. And again, that community support just goes a long way. Everyone of the Berlin Police Department has been moved except for the chief of police. After 26 years, I'm just not going to run out of the door. I'm going to be the last one. I'm going to go down with the ship. But we have the property room to still go ahead and move over, and we have some other things. We knew it was going to be a three-day transition when we did the hard move, and some systems are going to be down. So those little pains haven't been bad at all today, everything we anticipated, but we're asking everybody to be patient with us. We've already made contact with the county and the state, and they've actually helped us with some technical things. But everything is on pace to have a full move and have everybody out really soon. But everything over there is actually operational. The learning curve is coming. How do you go ahead and page somebody on the phones? How do you do this and do that? Those are the questions, and we're going to have a couple meetings to go ahead and do that. But everybody is very appreciative and very excited for the new move.
Great. Awesome. Great. Yeah, I have to say, that's wonderful news that on Saturday, the second day, the day after the ribbon cutting, that you had 100 citizens show up. That's wonderful. And there's a lot of pride. I mean, this is something, you know, you never know how the community will react to anything. You know, you hope, but long before it got open, and certainly this last few days has been proof that there's a lot of pride in this community.
But go ahead and see the kids with two cookies in their hands and the families come through. And then the last person, and again, you could have there put some guesses out there, was actually Jim Mathias. And
he was right on time.
Right on time. And the thing is, he either made the statement that he can now see the Berlin Police Department is something tangible from that agreement that was been made with the slots and everything else. And to go through that and the battle with Ocean City and everything, him to say, look at this. And then you can ride right by the highway and actually either see something tangible. A lot of the other entities have actually done things with the money, but I don't think you can have one of them come through and say, look at that, and actually really either pinpoint it with, you know, the actual funds that have been given to us through the slots.
Thank you. Thank you. And you, like I say, I think you all did a wonderful job in the planning and the conceptualizing and the initial architecture and engineering. And but really, it's just, I hope most folks don't ever see the inside of the police station except the lobby.
Right.
But if you ever have a chance to drop by, it's a very impressive. And I also want to congratulate you all on adopting a architectural look that, although it's cutting edge 21st century in terms of technology, it definitely it reflects the heritage of our turned 19th century, late 19th century historic look. And I think that means a lot to people as well. It doesn't look like a bunker, it looks like part of the community, which is great.
I have two things,
sure.
If we can. First, everything went great during the ribbon cutting. I'm glad to hear that everything went well with the community tour. Two things that I think a few of us noticed outside aesthetically, if we could find a way to shade the anchor, I think there's been some discussion about that in the front entrance where it says Berlin Police.
It's already planned.
Okay,
good,
perfect.
Good.
And a slightly larger flag for the Berlin Police
ordered.
Flag. Perfect. All right.
Good, that's
just so that we can see it when you drive.
You already know more than one person that made those comments.
Yeah,
I'm
think
glad
that, was
that
the
he made it right
theme.
Then and there. So we thank you for all those little bits. We also, the next one is bumpers right near the front where the pond is. So those are the three things.
That's true.
Yes.
And we're smart enough to go ahead and take on those good ideas.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations.
Yes.
Very, very
and
well deserved.
Thank you very much for all being there and supporting the whole process.
Thank you.
Sure.
It's our privilege. All righty. Next is planning and director Dave Englehart.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Well, I can't I can't match Arnold's firepower. But on our next new building, the Henry Park restroom.
Yes. Are we having a ribbon cutting? Because Dean wants to have a ribbon cutting.
I think it needs to be named after.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll give some good names.
Yeah, we'll send it to the naming committee. Sorry.
I won't comment on that.
It's good. It's fine.
But that's your purview. Tim mentioned that he powered up the unit. On tomorrow, the electrician's supposed to mount the meter base and electrify the building. Wednesday, the plumber's supposed to be there and do his hookups. And hopefully, if he gets far enough into it, the pressure testing of the lines, make sure that everything's working right, the water and the sewer. Jamie Latcham and some of his crew went out the end of last week. And if you noticed, if you've been by, it was a big hole of mud, and they've graded it, finished graded it. So next week, if the plumber's done Wednesday, then we would move on towards the sidewalks, and it could be operational.
Correct.
So hopefully time is short now. If the two contractors get in, the electrician tomorrow and the plumber Wednesday, I don't know about the weather with the sidewalks, but it'll be soon.
Good. That was great. And like I say, once it got here, you all were able to jump right on it. It's just
right.
getting it here.
So, yeah.
Yes.
No. It's the best outhouse that I've ever seen.
Well, I did
it
think
really
it
was
had,
nice.
But it does have indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
I remember those outhouses.
We all
experienced that back in the day. Okay. No, thank you very much. And congratulations on that significant improvement for Henry Park. And hopefully a follow on in the foreseeable future at Stephen Decatur Park. Next is Managing Director Jeff Fleetwood.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. A couple things, well, four things. Starting tomorrow and on Thursday, 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock, we will be interviewing prospective brokers, health insurance brokers. We did have a total of 4 that made submissions.
Good.
All 4 are from Eastern Shore. Furthest away would be Princess Anne, Salisbury, Willards, and then the other gentleman has an office in Selbyville, mm-hmm. but he's actually got a main office in South Baltimore.
Okay.
So he'll be here tomorrow and then on Thursday. So
great.
I hope to have a recommendation to Laura new folks by the end of the week.
Wonderful. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you.
Next Wednesday, a week from Wednesday, Mr. Dick First, I think Arnold knows what I'm talking about, was legit. He retired a couple years ago. But he took something on his own and formed this Lower Eastern Shore Safety Council. And we meet about every other month in different locations. So that's scheduled for next a week from Wednesday down at Eastern Correctional Institute. So that'll be interesting that day. Working on budgets. And on the 21st of March, which is a Friday, 12 noon in this chamber will be the 2018 employee recognition. 23rd, I'm sorry, thank you, Mary. 23rd. At 12 noon in the chamber, I'll send out more information as we get closer. The one thing that I will share, the 2018, just by virtue of the hiring cycle, the number of recipients this year is down to about 5. So it must have been a slow time.
Good. Does anybody have questions for Joe? No, thank you very much. Next, we have the town administrator's report. So Laura Allen.
We had a good turnout for the Gay Street meeting. Josh Taylor from DBF came and did an overview of the project proposal. We had a good discussion from the property owners in the room about how the town's going to handle turning off the water and how to time that with the business concerns in the area. Mm-hmm. So that went well. There was some discussion about changing the street to a one-way street, but that's not part of what the town's proposing at this point. So Josh Taylor's going to be making a few modifications to the plan based on feedback from the folks in the room, and then we'll be moving quickly to put that project out to bid.
Great. That's very good.
And then I wanted to thank the mayor and council for coming to the emergency preparedness training that was held on Thursday.
Oh, that was exciting.
Yeah. So that's the beginning of a long process we're going to be going through of training at various levels for all kinds of employees. You guys led the way, so I appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, is that it?
That's it.
Cool. I don't have any comments. Again, I wanted to congratulate the police department, but you know, we're lucky folks, all things considered, and so it's, again, we're lucky to be able to represent the community.
No, sir, I'm fine.
I have one comment.
Sure.
I've received a couple concerns from some residents regarding the parking during some of our events and their ability to maybe get some emergency services equipment to some of the residents in the event of some form of a disaster. So if we could kind of keep an eye on ways that we may be able to mitigate that. I know Washington Street's been a concern, mm-hmm. over by the schools, a tad bit of a concern during some of the events.
Which school?
Buckingham.
Okay.
So yeah. I've received some.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Hopefully that will open up the discussion again about parking and access to Buckingham, which
correct.
Came up a few years ago. We made an offer then, and it never got picked up on. So maybe now, with the greater number of people that are in the community, and obviously more so on the weekend, but certainly a lot of times during the week, we are very very high about population of motor vehicles. So, yeah, I think maybe that's another opportunity there. And we definitely want to work with all these folks. And parking, you know, I have to say, as I said in the interview I did the first of the year, that it's been simmering, but I think it's reached a point now where I'm hopeful that overwhelming majority of the community will support us as we begin looking into a variety of things, not just one and done, but a variety of things that we can do this year and for the next few years to make parking and, again, emergency access. And I'm glad you mentioned that because that's something I'm very, you know, hopeful and sincerely hopeful about, you know, improving the partnership with Berlin Fire Company, Fire and EMS. And I think that this is going to be a chance where finding ways, and they have some ideas and some good, very obvious good ideas about how to be immediately accessible, and maybe in some cases for the bigger events have some personnel on site with equipment for the crowd, and then also then the access around it for everybody.
I think when we get that parking on both sides of the street, it becomes very difficult to navigate a piece of equipment, especially making some of those turns from West Street onto Washington. They're already narrow roads, and then when you clog those intersections with vehicles on both sides, it gets to be a little cumbersome.
Yeah.
On a school side of things, I think maybe if we can sit down with Steve Price or maybe Lou Taylor and discuss a timing of some of the events so that they can utilize the bus loop for some of the parking. I've noticed that sometimes they'll have an event, but it's also at the same time they're either picking up or dropping off students. So if we could time that a little bit better, I think we can make some better use of the already existing parking.
Great. So. I think it's a great idea. Thank you. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
It's the only comment.
good. Thank you.
Yes. While we're on school, so I'd just like to see if Dave can check the new pattern of the road that's between the Stephen Decatur Middle School and Stephen Decatur, where the new apartments are coming online.
Yes.
If that's the last paving of that road, because a lot of our citizens have asked me about that road, it's kind of uneven, and the way that pattern is out there.
Well, there'll be further inspections before phase one is done. There's only one building there currently that has a certificate of occupancy. So that's to be determined. We still have more inspections to come.
Yeah, I got a couple bus drivers have concerns about that road also. And anybody goes on that road right now, it's really a weird road. I mean, you really got to watch what you're doing.
Yeah, well, it's a new pattern, too.
Yeah,
so,
it's a new
pattern. People are getting used to that. And it has that slope, and a lot of that's for the grade is for the stormwater.
Okay.
So we're not used to that as we're traveling that way. But yeah, so we've discussed that actually, and you know, with their responsibility, Jane and Jamie, for the public works, for the roads, they're not 100% happy with it either, so.
Now, there's so much traffic, you know, in beginning of school.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Yeah.
And in the afternoon. If you've never been through there, don't go, because I stay at school half an hour later just so I don't have to go home. There's so much traffic comes through that street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at what point do you will the line striping be there for the turn lanes and, I mean?
It's striped now.
It is striped, I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, so, but is that the final paving, as far as you know?
As far as I know, that's okay. The final paving, okay. But it's subject to inspection, too.
Okay. So. But I think, yeah, we'll just obviously,
you know, like the town care. Engineers will be looking at, the DBF will be looking at, yeah, that.
We'll just
us.
Give them a heads up about
citizens.
And we have concerns. You know, we've talked to them about it. So, I mean, we'll see where,
yeah,
when construction's done, what we're going to end up with. But, you know, we have the public works agreement in place, and they have the standards they have to comply with. So then, yeah, that we let the engineers inspect it, and if it doesn't comply, they have to resurface or do, yeah, repairs.
The best thing we did was make sure that traffic goes to 50.
Absolutely.
And not to Flower Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if that extra, the longer lane, the extra turn lane when you get out to 50, mm-hmm, wrapping around the Harley-Davidson. I mean, that was all State Highway, you know, had redone that intersection, if you remember, 2 years ago I'd started it. So that was all in conjunction with that. So that helps as a relief valve for the traffic you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I know it doesn't solve it, but that was the idea. It was to get people out on 50 and get west and get east, you know, and get gone, so.
Thank you. Okay, very good. Anyone in attendance tonight have any comments, questions, or anything you'd like to address with the council? Does anyone with the press have any questions or comments? Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Right. We stand adjourned, and thank you very much for your attendance.
Thank you.
Whatever date I had was probably my
unnecessary
guess of putting things together, because he was here before I started.
Growing to find our future. It's going to be happening at every point. So hopefully we'll learn from this.
Right.
But,
dial baby.
Yes.
Think with kindness about this whole thing. Because they're not coming
back.
All we can do is prepare for them best we can.
That's right.
But I agree with you. But it's interesting. I mean, every area with the, and I think, you know, in time, I don't know how fast 113 and 50 are going to have more businesses. It's just sitting there. There's a lot more inquiries, and we just have to think, you know, what? Like the service rate went up over there. In the service rate, today it's all the way down to Home Depot and Ocean.
You
also reduce some congestion. People have the option of going down there and going over there.
Right.
And never get over
there. Right. That'd be good.
That one wall.
Sure.
I forgot the trust. I never put the stickies on them, but you guys are pretty familiar,
yeah,
with your.
We signed a couple.
Use the parking lot.
Sir, I'm on their property. I'm going to turn left. I'm going right down Flower Street. I don't care about that. That's fine. I'm going to run over him. He's small.
But I think instead of a really
close, in my office, while you're doing that, let me just make sure there's nothing here.
Sanitary toilet seat. So we should give one to Dean.
That would work. Same as let's take it all over his car.
They're in my office. I can't do
that. I'll take care of that.
What you going to do?
I'm coming out of Ocean East. I'm
going to
be heading west. I'm going to make a left-hand turn. I'm coming right down Flower Street. Watch. I got a truck. I'm going to do it every single time just because.
There's not enough room to make that turn.
I've got a fire truck down there.
I tell you what, if they try to abuse that, some kids.
Okay.
That's a good one.
With this Betson hole, I think. you can sign that one. Since the motion, the motion read that the mayor was going to accept it. So accepted by and signed, and then I can put your name and title.
Okay. Any alias will do.
I'm the legacy.
There you go.
Now you're on. Today's the 12th. Bye.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Sure, got it.
You're all set.
It doesn't matter. He won't benefit.
No, I'm just saying that. I'm pretty sure he'll be okay with it.
Mayor, I was on the same page as you with the amount.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, nothing at all.
Well, that's what I had mentioned to you.
And it did give me a ticket, and it's all the article paper.
Well, I saw Laura, she's like having a stroke, and I looked over at Natalie to see what she was going to do.
I'm coming up.
The general fund budget is down to $5.something.